that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape, well, you better hit the
gym with Jim Wits.
That's right, man.
Welcome to the Jim Wits Podcast. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Jim Wits. So, Justin, what's your week in fitness been like? I haven't seen you at the gym recently.
Well, I'm healed up for the most part, and I'm going to get back into it. I think I'm going to go to kickboxing tomorrow. I'm actually going to join a gym that's very close to me because I'm finding that my home workouts are good, but I get them better when I'm there. I push harder. Plus, I like some of the cardio equipment, some of the heavier weights. I can do, you know, some deadlifts and stuff like that. So I think I'm going to join that gym. I'm going to really make a nice push. I was out of commission for about 3 weeks, so I'm really looking forward to getting back into it.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I haven't seen you in a bit.
And, well, I couldn't do it, but yeah. I'm going to be back.
It's tough. How do you feel physically? Do you feel weaker or tired?
Much better.
Oh, you feel better. Okay, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Feel good.
It'll be interesting to see how you feel that first day back, though, because it's always rough.
I haven't been eating too badly, so my weight, I think, is pretty good. So I think maybe, you know, a little rusty, but I'll get back into it pretty quickly.
Cool. All right, well, on the agenda today, we're going to be doing some interesting studies. So this is, I think, the third time that we've gone through this. So basically, just take some studies that have come out over the last few months. Some things that are interesting. We'll talk about the implications. Some we'll just briefly kind of go over them. But just some stuff that I found. I meant to do this a while ago, so some of these are fairly old, and I already have like a backlog of a bunch of other studies that I want to talk about. But these are like, let's just get these out of the way while we can. But no, these are some good ones, some interesting ones. So we'll just get right into it. All right, so the first one answers a question that everyone has, which is, why am I sore? So everyone has had that experience when you exercise for the first time or you do something new, you're always sore. And it's a question that science hasn't really been able to answer.
I thought it was because you worked out hard.
Yeah, but that's it's a result of working out hard. But even if you don't work out hard, you do something new.
Sure.
And, you know, there's part of it, there's like kind of these micro tears that happen in the muscle and they repair themselves. But the question is like, why are you sore the first time you do something, and why does it get better each successive time, even if you're working out hard? So according to researchers at BYU, the thought is that the immune system actually plays a role in the soreness. So basically, T cells, which respond to infection, flood the site of muscle damage, and the muscles become better or more efficient the second, third, fourth times at recruiting the T cells. So basically, that's why, or that appears to be part of the reason why you feel soreness the first time, and then it's not quite as intense the second, third, fourth times. Don't ask me to get into the science of this because I don't know, but that's as far as the that study went.
We'll have an immune system expert come on and talk about it.
I guess so. That might be kind of boring. I don't know.
What do you mean? It's not boring at all.
Depends on how much detail you want.
Yeah.
But we'll leave notes to the leave notes or links to this in the show notes, I should say.
Sure.
But yeah, there's not much to extrapolate from that right now.
Okay. Next study.
All right. So next study is from the University of Sydney. Again, and this is an interesting one. I think this more deals with when I get into it, we'll talk about kind of the ethics of it. But the article was titled, I think it was called "Exercise in a Bottle." Was the title? It was from a study, a University of Sydney study. So basically, the idea was there was a study of untrained and healthy males using mass spectrometry, and they found basically looking at the chemical changes in the body and as reactions to exercise. And they found over 1,000 changes or 1,000 chemical changes.
So when your body exercises, there's all these chemical changes.
Yeah, so there's thousands of things that happen. So basically, the idea is, or the implications are, that scientists could at some point develop drugs that mimic these chemical reactions, which somehow would then allow for the results that you would get from exercise. So I think that's the more interesting question, is obviously there are chemical reactions in the body, but the interesting question here is what would happen, or should there be chemical or like drugs that maybe can mimic the effects of exercise?
Well, I don't think it's the worst thing. I know that it really would kind of go against everything we stand for, but look, if it works and it's healthy, I don't see an issue with it. The only thing I don't see possible. So how are you going to build muscle that way? Can they really create something that will trick your body into thinking that you've, you know, broken down that muscle? Well, when you take, how about this? When you take the drugs, are the T cells going to flood the part of the body thinking that there's been an infection or a muscle breakdown? How are you going to build muscle? Also, psychologically, so much of exercise is psychological. Can you really build up your cardio that way? So the whole thing seems interesting. I know we've talked about it for years. What if you could make a drug that exercises you or something like that? I have my doubts that it will ever truly be that effective, because so much of the exercise, the reason why you do it is for the activity, not just for the results. So it's one of those tricky things. We'll see if it really works. Now, maybe my theory is that if this ever does come to fruition, it will be a supplement. It'll be something that will supplement your workout that might help but won't take the place of exercise. That's what I think could eventually happen. I doubt you could ever completely replace exercise with a pill, but we'll see.
Who knows? This would be decades, if not centuries, in the future where you could actually target specific reactions. But it's an interesting idea. We have drugs that do this anyway.
That will burn your fat.
Yeah.
That will do stuff like that, get your metabolic rate up, that sort of stuff. But
to mimic specific. Like, imagine if you have a device, or even maybe not a drug, but or some kind of device that you can shoot it directly. You can pinpoint like a muscle and shoot some kind of thing into the muscle.
Well, they do that. Now, they have muscle implants.
Yeah. Well, no, this is different.
Did you ever see that human Ken doll? That guy that
no,
was like
I've seen the human Barbie doll. I haven't seen the human.
There's
Ken
the human Barbie doll and the human Ken doll.
Okay.
Right. It's basically that he loved Ken. He wanted to look like Ken. So he had like these weird muscle implants, and he looked weird.
Like weird. Interesting. Yeah,
and he even had
that.
Plastic surgery to make himself look like Ken. Very freaky.
Strange. I've seen the human Barbie doll, which is bizarre looking, but I'm assuming this is somewhat similar.
Very similar. Yeah.
All right. Well. All right, the next one is, so this is another one, a question. So how do you think you lose fat? Like if you exercise, let's say you lose 5-10 pounds, how does that happen?
I always imagined that you somehow got converted to energy and then you burned it somehow.
But
you sweated it, maybe you sweated it or it came out in waste. I it's one of those weird things. I thought about it a lot, but it just maybe or just disintegrated. I always thought it somehow just disintegrated or it was used, because think about it, energy is neither lost nor gained. Like nothing, scientifically speaking, you can't ever get rid of something. You can only transfer it to something else. So your fat has to be transferred, in which case we know that in order for it to get burned, it has to transfer to energy. But then where does it go? How does it physically leave the body?
Yeah.
Always wondered that. No clue.
Okay, so this is interesting. This was in the British Medical Journal. This is actually about over a year ago. So I think it was like December 2 years ago, because I think it was 2014, right? This was about a year ago. That I remembered recently when we were doing this, like, I want to write about this, because I would talk about this, because it's just an interesting one. Again, not many implications. It's just an interesting idea, because again, you think, like, where does the fat go? You're on the right track. So basically, fat is exhaled as CO2. So I'll just read.
How is that possible?
I'm going to read this. Read a quote from it, because I won't be able to do justice to it. So basically, excess carbs and proteins are converted into chemical compounds called triglycerides, which we know, right? Excess protein, carbs.
Doctor wants me to get my triglycerides lower. They're too high.
Okay, so the triglycerides consist of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. They're stored as fat. Let me read this over. Excess carbs and proteins are converted into chemical compounds called triglycerides and then stored in the lipid droplets of fat cells.
Mm.
To lose weight, you're attempting to metabolize those triglycerides, and that means unlocking the carbon that's stored in your fat cells. So basically, you exhale the fat, or exhale the CO2 that it gets converted into CO2. So some of the math, which is interesting. So if you lose 10 kilograms of fat, you would take in 29 kilograms of oxygen. You breathe out 28 kilograms of CO2. And then that would yield about 11 kilograms of water, 8.4 kilograms exhaled as CO2. And then the rest is just released, urine, sweat, etc.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting. So again, it's just, you know, not, there's nothing you can do with it. You're not going to take that and change your workout or do anything, but it's just an interesting idea that,
So maybe if you breathe more, you lose more fat.
Then we should brand that. We'll market the new, the CO2 workout. You just rapid breathing. That'll be the gym. It's the next program. All right, so the next two both deal with massive weight loss. So okay. One deals with actually bariatric surgery, and one deals without bariatric surgery.
Okay.
And they're both very interesting. So basically, the first one, which is the American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery, covers weight loss surgery results over 5 years. And so they followed over 450 patients over 5 years who all had the surgery, the sleeve gastrectomy. And they found that after 1 year, on average, 77% of the patients maintained the weight loss. Hmm. After 3 years, 70% of the patients maintained their weight loss. And after 5 years, 56% of the patients maintained their weight loss. So then to go beyond weight loss, half of the patients, half of diabetes patients, so the patients that had diabetes, were in remission after 1 year. Hmm. And then 20% were in remission after 5 years. Hmm. So this one now... I'll talk about the other study, and then we can talk about kind of how they're connected. So the second study was in the American Journal of Public Health, and this one was the chances of obese people attaining normal weight. Okay. So this one, it was over 250,000 people were tracked for this study, and they found, and this is also people who do it naturally, so it not excluding surgery,
so
weight loss surgery.
So these are people that did not use any surgery.
Yeah, so whether it's exercise or diet, okay. Or you know, maybe it's, I'm not sure if it also includes people using some type of weight loss drug, but this excludes surgery.
Okay.
So it found that one in 210 men will reach a normal weight. One in 124 women will attain a normal weight. Now, then it extends itself. So anyone with severe obesity, it's one in 1,290 men, and one in 644 women. And it found that even the chances of losing 5% body weight would be one in 12 men and one in 10 women. So that's not even getting normal weight, but just losing 5%. And then 53% of the people would gain the weight back in 2 years, and over 70% would gain the weight back in 5 years.
Wow.
So it's interesting. So you know, implications here, it seems to me that we need to rethink our approach to weight loss, because there's obviously some kind of a disconnect.
Did it say why?
No, I don't think it doesn't go into why. But obviously there's some kind of an issue, because even people that lose the weight are seeming to gain it back. Even people who go through surgery that lose the weight are gaining the weight back. So there's an issue. The issue is...
So it's not about losing it initially. It's about maintaining it. That's what they're referring
to. So the two studies,
or
so
a combination.
So it's
of
a combination.
Not being able to lose it, or the people that do lose it gain it back.
It's a combination. So the first study, So the first study is people who actually get the surgery, and in that case, only 56% of the people keep the weight off after 5 years. So long term, there's still some kind of an issue. Obviously, it's better than nothing. So 56% is better than 0%. But a large percentage, right, 44%, are not maintaining the weight loss. And this is people who have weight loss surgeries. They're going to the extreme. And then the second study shows that, A, it's incredibly difficult for people to lose weight normally, right? So one in 210 men will attain normal weight, and only one in 10 men will lose 5% of the body weight. And then the numbers for women are a little bit better. One in 124 women will attain normal weight, and one in 10 women will lose 5%. But it still shows, so A, it's hard to lose it, but then again, the same study showed that 53% will gain the weight back in 2 years, and 70% will gain the weight back in 5 years. So we're just seeing a problem of A, losing it, but even when the weight's lost, there's a problem of keeping it off.
Okay. But we sort of knew that already, but I guess we didn't know it to the extent that, you know, that is being published in this study. You know why? Because we hear all these stories with these television shows, you know, The Biggest Loser, we see infomercials, so we think that people are losing a lot of weight and keeping it off, but I guess it's just not true.
Yeah.
I guess when you really look at the vast numbers, people that are obese stay that way, or if they are able to lose it, they gain it back.
Yeah. So. Well, it shows that there are a lot of variables, and more than just losing weight. We tend to focus, when we focus on diet or weight loss, the focus is just losing weight. It's the goal is weight loss. The goal's not lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. So part of the problem is that we need to find, rethink how we approach the diet or how we approach weight loss, because the focus seems to be, again, on the process of losing weight, and not so much on the lifestyle and everything around it, and making it something that can complement the weight loss and that's just sustainable.
Does it, you don't know if the study factored in lifestyle changes?
No.
Doesn't mention anything. It's focused
only, I think,
on
these
the
are
weight.
More just on the numbers, not on lifestyle changes. I mean, outside of, again, the one lifestyle change is getting surgery, obviously that's significant. But again, even the surgery, that doesn't, for some people, it does solve a problem. For some, if there's a genetic issue, that might, you know, that might help.
Just get people,
or
to
if
a
you're
point
just
where
at a point
function.
Where you physically can't function because of your weight, but it still doesn't address the problem. If you're, you know, a large portion of people that are obese because of lifestyle choices.
Sure.
And so for those where it's a lifestyle choice that's the source, if you don't fix the lifestyle, then you're gonna gain the weight back. So that becomes an issue, part of the problem, rather than just focusing on let's cut the weight. So there needs to be, a little bit different approach, and maybe this also needs to extend towards the media and how we deal with talking about weight loss and talking about diet and exercise, and again, making it a more holistic approach and changing the mindset again, changing lifestyles rather than let's just change your body, because that it'll have results for
Band-Aid.
As long as, exactly, it's a Band-Aid and it's not addressing the real issue.
We could probably do 100 podcasts on this topic.
Well, when it's all said and done, we'll probably do a good deal of podcasts on this topic. So I think just, again, a couple of interesting studies that highlight some of the issues when it comes to the industry and just weight loss in general.
Sure. Wow.
All right, so this one was in David Lloyd's Leisure. This was, a poll or survey of 2,000 people that basically showed that men exercise twice as much as women, which is interesting because I didn't realize it was that much. But men are less likely to consider themselves health conscious. So half of men polled and 60% of women polled consider themselves health conscious or conscious of their well-being and fitness. But again, men exercise as much as twice as much as women.
Now, does this study have a location?
This was done, I think, in combination. Let's see, it was David Lloyd's Leisure. I think it's a gym. And so again, you got to take it with a bit of a grain of salt. But it seems like it was a poll of people. And it was done in combination with, the British Heart Foundation. So, again, it doesn't go too much into detail.
Because from people that I know more women that exercise than men.
Yeah.
Here in New York, it seems like women, if you're a woman of a certain age, they're all into exercise and working out. And men, they have to, the men that exercise and that work out are really, have to be really into it. But it just seems like women, almost every woman I know is exercise and working out, but not nearly as many men that I know are working out. So I don't know where they got these statistics from, where this was. Maybe it's just because we live in New York.
Yeah.
Or maybe things are different in Europe. But also, what do they refer to as exercise? Because men might play more sports or contact sports or something like that,
things.
Which I don't even know if that's true.
So
if they consider anything exercise,
basically it says on average, men do a half an hour of vigorous exercise twice a week, and women managed one weekly workout. And it also revealed that men are more likely to go to the gym in addition to playing football or cycling or swimming or some other kind of sports or, you know, activity in addition to the exercise. But yeah, it's interesting because it's kind of somewhat anecdotal. Like, even I notice more women at the gym, but I also notice more women because I notice them in classes and I teach a lot of classes. But if you look at the fitness floor at most gyms, it's way more men. So I'll typically see more women.
It's what gym you go to.
Yeah. No, not really. I work at a lot. I mean, most gyms in the...
There's
in
a lot
the,
of women's gyms, though. And it also depends what classes you go to. What if you go... Because you might go on my under gym floor, but look who's taking the classes.
Yeah.
So it's just... I don't know. I just do not buy those statistics based on what I know. And I know a lot of people. And I know a lot of...
Yeah, but so that part, it's anecdotal.
I'm sure you know a lot of... You know a lot of... I know that doesn't mean anything. And I know you know a lot of people. But I know you... There's a lot of women work out. It's just...
No, absolutely.
I just don't buy that statistic that two... What did they say? Two for every... Two to one?
Basically, yeah, twice as many.
I just do not believe that. I just...
Yeah, there isn't much more data behind it. It seems like it's just a survey of 2,000 people, so I don't know. I would say it's probably off, but not that far off. Again, I know there are far more men that will use the weight area of a gym than women.
Oh, the weight area.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm talking about. Yes. Yeah.
But just exercising in general.
Yeah, that's true. It's interesting also that but the other interesting thing is that the men consider themselves less health conscious.
That's really interesting. That's concept.
Yeah. So that's, again, an interesting study.
I wonder why would that be?
What?
That they don't consider themselves health conscious. Now I'm wondering if this becomes an issue of semantics yet again, because the men work out, they're just not... When they're not health conscious, does that mean they're not worrying about it or not thinking about it?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Or it means because, I work out, so I'm just not, you know, I'm not worried, I'm not concerned about it.
Yeah.
While women... are concerned about it or might be actively concerned about it, but it doesn't mean the wording is very confusing.
Yeah.
So if you work out, that means you are thinking about it, you are health conscious, but maybe you're not concerned with it.
You don't consider yourself health conscious. So maybe you work out, it's an obligation, but you don't think about being.
But you are.
Yeah.
So once again, this study sounds just very. Oddly worded.
Well, yeah, no, it's definitely not a peer-reviewed study.
I don't get anything from it. I wouldn't listen to this one personally, but
I do think the part about I think the one issue, the one thing about men being a little less not considering themselves health conscious is interesting.
But once again, what does that mean? Does it mean that they are actively considered? Does it mean that they are not concerned with it, or that they don't actively think about it, or that they what is? Health conscious mean?
Yeah. What does that mean? What does it mean to you?
To me, it means concern. Like, I'm worried about it. I go about my day thinking and making choices based on that. Now, you could be health conscious, but not really actively do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just part of your lifestyle. If you live a certain way and you eat a certain way, right, and it's healthy, you're not concerned about it because you're like, my lifestyle doesn't lend me to would not lead me to be worried about my health because I know that I'm healthy. Yeah. So then you're not concerned about it, but you are concerned about it because you lead a lifestyle that way. So the whole thing
My take on it is semantics. I think it deals with maybe a little bit of, and it's part of our society. We place a lot more emphasis on women and women's looks and bodies. So for men, maybe most men I know that aren't regulars in the gym or that aren't really, I guess, obsessed with the aesthetics of their body aren't put very little time or thought or consideration into how they look or their awareness or the thought day to day of like, how healthy am I? That doesn't come up as much as with women, where the looks and how, you know, how much they weigh, that tends to be a little bit more in the forefront of a woman's mind than a man's mind in our society. And it's, you know, thrown in your face. You can get away, you know, in Hollywood or in magazines, you can get away with being a little bigger for a man, where for women, they're just held to different standards. And so that might be where the consciousness is, that, you know, is it on the forefront of your mind?
Well, but see, and that's really flawed. So that means worried about the way that you look means you're health conscious.
But that's how our society is.
But that's
it's
wrong.
It's wrong, but it's how it is.
But But worried about how you look has nothing to do with how healthy you are. We know that
yes.
that the way that you could be really skinny and look but be unhealthy.
Yeah.
So what does health mean? Does health just refer to what your weight level is, or does it mean your overall physical state and whether your heart is healthy, your organs are healthy, or does it mean how you're perceived to look? So if, you're, you know, it's
if you
well,
so the thing is that if you count, it is vague. But if you account for extremes, obviously someone who's – even somebody who's a bodybuilder, a lot of bodybuilders are not healthy. Or someone who's very, very thin or skinny, you know, they may or may not be very healthy. So if you take out the extremes, typically if you're in – the better shape you are, the healthier you're going to be.
Yes.
More often than not.
Sure, sure.
So I think if we – again, eliminating the extremes, you can look at it that way. Most people, unfortunately, until you start to get older and you're dealing with health issues that are connected to age, for most people, their health is directly tied to their looks and their physical appearance. It just is what it is. Again, it's not right. It's not the way that things should be, but it is. It's the way things are. And most people, when, you know, and I find this interesting because when I interview new clients, one of the things I ask them is basically I have them rank four things. And let me see if I can remember this off the top of my head. One is health. One is aesthetics. One is function. And the last is energy level. So those are the four things that are typically like the main goals, right? You have aesthetics, which is how you look. Function, which is just day-to-day functioning, or it could extend to athletics or sports. Overall health, so health and well-being, as we're discussing, and
which
then energy levels.
But with health, see, interestingly enough, health is the most important.
Yes.
But the hardest to really understand.
Yeah.
All that really translates to is
how about
sort of
likelihood
your long
of
life.
Dying?
Yeah, your long
yeah.
life,
so,
less disease, that sort of quality
yeah.
of life. So it's one of those things that you don't notice there's something wrong.
Well, the
until
point,
it's wrong.
The point I'm trying to make
bad.
Is the younger the person, and again, that's why this survey maybe could have accounted for age, and maybe it did, and I didn't look deep enough into it.
Yeah.
But again, the younger people in their 20s, early 30s, aesthetics is almost always one.
Sure.
And then, and health, with health being two, usually. But then as they get, you know, mid-30s, 40s, 50s, that shifts where the health becomes number one. And so again, it's just awareness of certain things. So when you're younger, you're just more aware of your aesthetics. And even though it's kind of tied to the health, that's the most important thing. And then as you get older, you start thinking more about the health, and then the health becomes the primary goal, primary concern.
So let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Are you health conscious?
Of course.
Well, sort of think about the question again.
Okay.
We know that you're concerned about your weight. You're concerned about your fitness level.
Yeah.
But are you worried? Are you concerned about how healthy you are?
Yes.
Really? But you know you're healthy. So do you really think day to day that you're worried about what you eat is going to affect your overall health? I don't think you do.
I don't think you do.
I think you're worried about your fitness level. I think you're worried about your weight.
Energy
and
levels.
I think your energy levels in terms of performance and in terms of how you go about your day. But I don't think you're worried about your health because
okay.
you know you're healthy. So would that make you health conscious? Yes, you are, but through indirect means. You see what I'm saying? You know I'm right, too.
I'm going to tell you why you're wrong. No, you make a good point. But, you know, one thing is, you know, having seen people... I train a lot of people or I work with a lot of people through classes. So I have very direct knowledge and direct experience with how as you get older, the chances of some kind of health problem, no matter your fitness,
yeah.
your supposed fitness level, the potential for things to go wrong with the body increases with age. So I'm aware of it. So I do try to make good choices when it comes to my dietary and exercise because I know that it's very easy for somebody who appears healthy to be unhealthy or for things to come up.
So what differences or what choices or decisions have you made based on your health that would not have just been made in general based on your fitness level? So what have you done differently to accommodate your health or to improve your health that would have been, you know, not having to do with your fitness level? See what I'm saying?
Make choices like...
Because they're almost... Remember, fitness level and health are related.
Yes.
They are related, but they're different at the same
time. Okay, I'll give you a great. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I don't run as much.
Because you think that it's not as good for your health.
Protecting knees, protecting the joints. So I won't run, 6 miles a day or 6 miles at a time or 8 miles at a time, protecting the joints. I don't spar as much or as heavy. Same thing. It will help my fitness because of the intensity of the training, but it's going to have a negative effect on my health down the road.
Okay.
So those are just some choices.
Think about the top of
dietary. I've never needed to eat fruits and vegetables. I don't eat much, and I've made a conscious effort to eat more. I've tried to eat more foods that have an effect on the body and deal with fighting certain diseases that you do get as you get older. So I've tried. I'm not perfect with it, but I've been aware of it. Let's say.
Well,
I'm conscious of it.
Well, that's a lesson for everyone out there. If Ryan, who is the pillar of good fitness
Definitely
and good
not,
health, will can make decisions to better his health, then you guys can too. So that's just something to think about. Even if you're in good shape, even if you are very fit, you can still do things to improve your health. And while they are related, they're not exactly one and the same.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is that there is such thing as too much exercise or too much diet. Anything in excess can be bad for you. And that's why I could use running as an example. And there's one thing this is not included in this interesting studies edition, but there have been some interesting studies about the effect of long-term intense cardiovascular activity on the heart, and not all is positive. So that's just one thing. I think this may be an episode in itself, because I want to look at some of the research. There's some research, obviously there's tons of research that's pro cardio, but there have been a few things that have come out that are showing that might have a bit of a negative impact on the heart. So that maybe doing too much maybe isn't the best thing in the world. So and something like that. Like, you think what's a pillar of health? It's like the marathon runner. Like, that's what we think. There's someone who can run 26.1 miles. That's a pillar of health and something that we all look towards as a milestone or a goal, and many people aspire to it, and it's incredibly difficult. But is it the healthiest thing in the world? Now, I'm not saying it is or it isn't right now. I'm just saying that there is some interesting research out there, and I think, again, this would be a good episode in itself. So when we're ready, we'll kind of put something together.
That's a great idea.
Talking about that. But,
all right, guys.
All right, I think that's about enough for today.
We had that long discussion about the last study.
Yeah, which wasn't even much of a study. So
we
spent the most time on the one study that was just like a survey. Anyway, that's it. Let us know if you have any questions or if you have any interesting studies that you'd like us to talk about. We love your feedback. As usual, all of our stuff can be found at thegymwits.com. Definitely, if you use iTunes or anything, iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever you use to listen to us, please rate us. We need the reviews, ratings. It helps with the whole algorithm and getting us ranked high, and that we get more listeners and we can put out more content, etc., etc. So that's it. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, aka Chef Sonic.
And we are the Gymwits.